I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. This is the word of the Lord.
Oh, good morning, everyone. My name's Jansen. I'm part of the 10:30 service here, for those of you who don't know me, and that's my wife, Heather, and we're here, a part of this congregation with our three children. Have you noticed that the experts have labels for all sorts of fears? There's the fear of the dark, scotophobia. There's the fear of social situations, sociophobia. We all know of claustrophobia, the fear of confined spaces. But there's also agoraphobia, the fear of open spaces. And there's, of course, the fear of what I'm doing right now, public speaking. I think 75% of people have that. But there's also the fear of what you're doing right now, being seated. Not only that, there's the fear of standing. There's labels for all these. I'm not going to take the time, but there's the fear of objects on the left side of the body. Of course, on the right side of the body, there's the fear of hairy people and the fear of bald people, the fear of the color purple, and even the fear of being afraid. Phobophobia. So while it's not hard to see the humor in much of this, evidently real people suffer from each of these. And the reality is all of us face different fears. The result is that these fears can often hold us back from living life to its fullest. Surveys say that 10 to 20% of people are afraid of going to the dentist. So they don't go to the dentist. Fear holds them back from getting their teeth clean. It's not hard to see how our fears can hold us back from experiencing God's best for us. This morning you might be here and be anxious or fearful about something coming up this next week. Maybe you're fearful of handling a certain relational conflict, or a difficult financial situation or situation at work. Some of you here are anxious about a significant health problem. Maybe even for you, it's the dentist appointment you have coming up this week. Here in Psalm 121, in verse 1, it's assumed the psalmist has things to be afraid of. And so the question that stands over the whole psalm is, where does my help come from? This psalm encourages us, we're going to see, encourages us to do two simple things when our fears threaten to immobilize us or to hold us back. Number one, it encourages us to be humble enough to seek help. And number two, to recognize that the Lord is our only real helper. So look back in verse 1. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. So in lifting up his eyes to the mountains, the psalmist is probably daunted by the scary landscape ahead of him. He's apparently on or just about to depart on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Note the superscription just right above verse 1 there. It reads, a song of ascents. This directs our reading to see this psalm as part of a larger collection of 15 songs of ascent, all here together from Psalm 120 to 134. According to most scholars, these would have been sung as pilgrims going up to Jerusalem from around Israel as they would make their way to Mount Zion, where God dwelled in the temple. So in the first of these 15, that's just the previous one, Psalm 120, apparently the psalmist is struggling with life when everyone around him seems to be stirring up trouble. So just dip in there to verse 6, where it says, too long have I lived among those who hate peace. So the psalmist here badly needs a break from it all. Sometimes today we say, I just need a holiday. For the godly Israelite, they would say, I just need a holy day. And so if we read these psalms together, when we get to Psalm 122, the next one, he's made it finally to Jerusalem. Just dip in there to verse 2 there. Our feet are standing in your gates, O Jerusalem. So we might say he's on the ultimate holy day getaway. It's festival time. This is Fiji times 1,000. It's the one place God dwells in his temple. And all is right with the world here. But before he actually gets there, before he gets to Jerusalem, he's got a long, arduous journey ahead of him. So our psalm, Psalm 121, is especially for pilgrims setting out on this journey. And as the psalmist lifts his eyes up to the mountains, there, and Zion, really, Zion is just one of the many mountains that he sees out in front of him. All these mountains are known to be full of danger, places with wild animals and hideouts for bad guys. Anyone remember the parable of the Good Samaritan and what road that the Good Samaritan is on? He's coming from Jericho up to Jerusalem, and he has to go through the Judean desert, which is full of mountainous terrain. And what happens on that road? A Jewish man is attacked, left there half dead. So if the mountains around Jerusalem, Mount Zion there, if they're at all symbols of hope for the psalmist, well, it seems clear that it's fear that strikes first. So we can imagine as the psalmist considers departing towards these mountains, his mind is taken with anxiety. His stomach is churning. His heart is beating faster and louder. He's got a choice to make. Will he let his fear hold him back? Will he give up on the holy day he so longs to have? Or will he seek help? My help comes from the Lord. Where does my help come from? He asks that question first, doesn't he? But let's just consider this choice here for a minute. How often are we filled with fear and filled with anxiety about the way forward, and we allow that fear to have the last word? Maybe we're too prideful to ask for help, so we shrink back. We don't talk to that stranger. We don't have that difficult conversation we know we need to have. We move away from rather than towards an opportunity to minister to someone else. Fear holds us back from the path God would have for us. So point one, like the psalmist, when we're confronted with fear and anxiety, We need to be humble enough to ask for help. But verse 2 makes it clear that it's not enough to ask for help from anyone and anything. We need to be quick to recognize where our true source of help lies. My help comes from the Lord. He almost, in Israel, you can't look up at the mountains and think of those peaks without thinking of the idolatrous worship that would have taken place at the tops of so many of those mountain peaks. So the psalmist here, in saying his help comes from the Lord, may well be saying, from the Lord, not from the other gods. In this case, he's passing over the most popular answer to his question that his unbelieving culture would have been there with a ready answer. If he would have, say, typed into the Google search engine, help on dangerous journey, well, the top 100 search results would not even have mentioned the name of the Lord, Yahweh. So all the experts, all the WikiHow sites were all saying that it's the gods of the land that are your best source of help. Turn to them. And of course, our own culture has its own gods, its own so-called solutions to our fears and anxieties. We have libraries full of advice and self-help books. We've got social media that lets us have relationships without the fearful prospect of letting people know the real us. We have endless sources of entertainment. It's ours with just a push of the button or a swipe of the finger. This entertainment with the power to distract us from thinking too hard about our fears and our problems. Here, our psalmist is a model of barely giving any consideration at all to all these other possible solutions to his fears, these solutions that might appear to be the real solution, but really not be such a solution. It's almost as if as soon as fear sets in there in verse 1 and he starts looking for help, well, verse 2, he recalls the true source of his help, where that lies. My help comes from the Lord. But note, he doesn't end there. It's not enough. He adds this little phrase, the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. Now, why add that? The American preacher Tony Evans tells of the story of being stuck in an elevator between floors. And when the elevator comes to a halt, after a while, people around him start getting anxious and start yelling for help. But no answer. So they're like, help, get us out of there. And this is in the days before they had mobile phones. And at that time, Evans turns to the phone in the elevator and calls security. Problem solved. He knew exactly the right place to turn to, and that made all the difference. To say the Lord is the maker of heaven and earth is to recognize he's exactly the right person to turn to. As the all-powerful maker of heaven and earth, and really everything in between, whatever I fear cannot be bigger than he is. But the mountains are, they're full of danger. The mountains really are scary places. The idea here is, but listen, this God made those mountains. He controls those mountains, and not just the mountains, but every possible source of fear in those mountains. Has anyone growing up ever played with little plastic toy soldiers? Growing up in America, we would play with little cowboys and Indians. And so you'd set them up and get your rubber bands out and shoot them down. And I can especially remember how fierce looking the Indians were, often with the tomahawks in their hands and these deep scars in their faces. But all it took was, I can remember, for my baby sister to just crawl over the top of the whole thing and knock them all down. So that's kind of like God, isn't it? For him, any would-be fearsome attackers are like a few plastic toy soldiers or cowboys and Indians, a quick flick, and they're sent reeling. Bottom line is, the Lord is the only one who can really be trusted to help us. And so if you're going to yell for help, and you should, because the mountains are scary, and really, you're not equipped to handle them on your own. So if you're going to yell for help, then cry out to the only one who can really help. Does anyone remember the story of Hezekiah in Jerusalem? 701 BC, surrounded by the largest army of the world at that time, and kind of the mother of all vice grips. And at that point, he calls out to the Lord as maker of heaven and earth. And we read that the Lord proceeds to strike down those soldiers, 120,000, like so many plastic toy soldiers. That's our God. What an amazing God, right? But it does raise an irony that here the psalmist is a believer in this God. He's on a journey to worship this God at his temple in Mount Zion. This God who reigns above everything. Yet, he's worried, the psalmist is worried about where his help might come from in order to get to Jerusalem. Does that sound a bit familiar to anyone? Like the psalmist, we too are on a journey toward Zion, toward the heavenly Zion. Yet the reality is that seldom does who God is in his fullness, it's often not at the forefront of our minds, right? And so our hearts become anxious. Like the psalmist, we need to remind ourselves of exactly who it is that we worship. He is the all-powerful creator of heaven and earth. And when we recall this, it should be like those people in the elevator realizing, oh, hey, we've got a security phone here. They're a real source of help. If we don't recall this, then fears can easily overwhelm us. Fears, as insignificant as little plastic toy soldiers, can easily turn us away from God's best for us. So number one, when we're tempted to let fear have the final word, we need to be humble enough to seek help. Number two, we need to recognize the Lord is our only real helper. The rest of this psalm really just expands on this picture of how amazing a helper we have in the Lord. Look at verse 3. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. He will not let your foot slip. When I think of slipping, I think of growing up in Midwest America and the long, icy winters we'd have. The worst was what they'd call black ice. And that's ice so thin, it's on the footpath or on the street, so thin you cannot even see it. And so you're walking along, and bam, before you even know it, your backside slams down on the concrete. A friend of mine in uni actually fell forward onto his eye socket. And I still remember it took months before he lost what was a kind of funky-looking appendage just sticking out of the side of his head. Slipping, by definition, happens lightning fast. For God to stop it means he's got to be right there by your side, guarding your every step. when little children are just getting the hang of walking. Well, you know that there's times where it's just really dangerous for them to fall, especially if you're crossing a busy street. So you grab hold of their hand, right? And you know as you're crossing that street, yeah, they're very, very likely to fall down. But when they do, well, you're right there holding them up, and you can get to the other side together. So while the NIV's rendering here, he who watches over you, it's an okay translation. I think the danger is it could be taken to imply that God is kind of watching over us from a distance. So anyone have an ESV translation out there? If you do, it renders it, he who keeps you. This term is often used to mean to protect, to watch over very closely. It's a name for professional guards, people whose sole job it is to watch someone very closely and make sure nothing bad happens, almost as if one of God's primary jobs is to look after us. So the word, we might translate it to get these ideas all together, keeper, guardian. Keeper, guardian. This word is the key word of the psalm. It occurs 6 times. It's the key image of this psalm. You might say it answers the question of just what kind of help does God offer that he talks about in verse 1? And the answer would be, throughout the most difficult terrain ahead, your keeper, guardian will be right there by your side, holding your hand every step of the way. So how obvious could it be that he is our only real source of help? And then to further drive home the point, he says, he who keeps you will not slumber. And we all know from watching TV and movies that the number one risk for any security guard is that he's gonna fall asleep right at that critical moment. Our family lives on the campus of SMBC, and we used to live in a semi where we had a student family on the other side of the semi. And one night, a robber broke in through the back door, the door that opened up onto the family room. Well, it just so happened that the father, the student dad, was sleeping right in front of the door in the family room. He just had a baby. So the thief is stopped in his tracks, right? Well, no. The thief just proceeded to step over the dad and then make his way down the hallway into his wife's bedroom where the new baby was sleeping and snatched her purse from the side of her bed and went out the front door. In contrast to not being awake at the critical moment, Israel's guardian keeper will not sleep or slumber. That is 100% of the time. He's attentive, not just part of the time, but around the clock. We used to have a gate that would keep our kids from in the driveway from getting out on the busy street there. One day, I can remember very vividly, my wife and I are talking, and our kids are out in the driveway, and well, the ball went over the gate into the street. And Heather says, "Oh, did I hear the gate open?" I'm like, "Oh, don't worry about it. You know, she goes out, and well, Ethan was, I think, 5 at the time. He found a way to unlock the gate, and then she finds Ethan, and then our 3-year-old and our 1-year-old at the time, all right out there by the edge of the street. As parents, it's literally impossible to be keeper guardians of your kids at every moment. The psalmist here says that this is exactly what God does for us as his children. That's his job. It's what he's in the business of doing. Look at verse 4. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The word indeed, literally, it's behold, look, The spotlight is put on Israel. The spotlight is put on God as the keeper of Israel. That is, century after century, he's proved himself as Israel's keeper guardian. But this might raise the question, yeah, so he's Israel's keeper guardian, but is he really going to be so focused about caring for me and my fears? Well, the rest of the psalm answers this question with a barrage of second-person singular pronouns. You, your, 10 times in the psalm. The Lord is your keeper. He's your shade. He's at your right hand. So yes, he's keeper guardian of Israel as a whole, but he cares just as much about your individual worries and concerns. He is your only real source of help. Look at verse 5. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. So literally, it's the sun will not strike you down. So the level of danger here is ramped up from the previous verses. The sun is pictured as a robber that tries to strike down the pilgrim. I had a chance to do an archaeological dig in Jordan years ago, and the digs take place. The sun is so hot. To avoid the heat, the digs would take place before sunup and just after sunup. So the midday meal was 9 a.m. That gives you any idea of the job here. For some reason, the first day, I just thought I could show up in shorts and a t-shirt and I'd be fine. But the sun, when it came up over the horizon, it was so scorching hot. The sun was beating down on my head so hard. I remember all I could do is take off my shirt and wrap it around my head just to keep the sun off it just a bit. And that's when I realized why the Arabs wear, you know, those kafiyas special hats that they do. So taking a long road trip with this kind of heat, without an air-conditioned McDonald's every few exits, it could easily bring dehydration and a heat stroke from which one would never recover. So the rare sight of a shade tree was a godsend. Verse 5, the Lord is your shade on your right hand. The psalmist says, imagine having a shade tree that would just follow you around your entire journey. That's what God is like. He's a shade tree on your right hand, the side that your personal guard would stand there to protect you. So no matter how bad the heat might get, the Lord is going to be right there by your side to protect you every step of the way. Verse 6 there talks about the moon, and that's kind of it's much discussed. Well, why is that a danger? Some think, well, some people were fearful of it being a kind of an attacking demon. We still use words like moonstruck and lunacy that speak of the negative effects of the moon or the night. I think the idea probably is that the sun and the moon are used together to speak of all the dangers of both day and night. So the idea is throughout your journey, the Lord is going to be right there by your side to protect you from danger, no matter what it is and no matter when it strikes. Psalm 46:1 puts it this way, the Lord is an ever-present help in times of trouble. Clearly, he is your only real source of help. So what are you fearing as you have come in here this morning? Maybe it's something that's bearing down on you like the hot desert sun. Will you trust the Lord as your only real helper? Trust him to be your shade. Or will you let your fear hold you back? The final two verses of the psalm really sum up the whole. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. So the point couldn't be made more strong and more all-encompassing. The Lord will be your keeper guardian throughout all time and all places. Now, this psalm is a pretty short one. It's only 8 verses, so it's not saying everything on this topic. A couple points probably should be noted. One is that the psalm applies to God's faithful children. So you could look at lots of other psalms that insist that it's those who love God and who are committed to Him that God keeps and that God helps. Secondly, you don't have to be too much of a skeptic here to say, yeah, but really, is God always going to keep those who love Him, as it says there in verse 7, from all harm? Going to keep them from all harm? Well, elsewhere in the Psalms, it's precisely those who are experiencing harm that God helps. And it says God keeps. It's the one facing illness. The ones who've somehow come on hard times, often the fatherless and the widow and the refugees. So it's clearly wrong to take this psalm in isolation, a kind of simplistic promise that if we're just faithful as Christians, well, God's going to always make our life easy. The call to be a faithful servant for the psalmist here in the Old Testament is the same as the call to be a faithful disciple of Jesus in the New Testament. It's a call to follow the path that goes through suffering. God's promise is not to keep us from the troubles of life. His promise is to keep us through the troubles of life. Let me say that again. God's promise is not to keep us from the troubles of life, but to keep us through the troubles of life. We know that the book of Psalms was the prayer book of Jesus himself. And I can't help but think that Jesus prayed this very prayer as he set out for Jerusalem on the final pilgrimage of his life, headed to the festival of the Passover. I lift up my eyes to the mountains, he would have said. And looking at those mountains standing between his home in Galilee and Mount Zion, I'm pretty sure even Jesus had at least the beginnings of anxiety. Like the psalmist, he also would have had though, this deep-seated comfort of knowing that this final pilgrimage would ultimately end in the loving presence of his heavenly Father. Even for Jesus, God's help, God's close keeping, it didn't mean he bypassed the path of pain and suffering. Same goes for us. God's help and close keeping means that when the tough times do come, we can be confident our keeper guardian has not fallen asleep. He's right there protecting us every step of the way. I want to conclude by having each of us recite the first 2 verses of the psalm to someone else. So grab your Bible and find a partner, and maybe we'll all say these 2 verses together, and then everybody is going to repeat it to someone else, and that's how we'll conclude, okay? So Psalm 121, verse 1. Let's read this all together. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. All right, now recite that to someone else, and we'll end there.